Welcome to the Two Geeks and a Microphone podcast, your one-stop shop for television, movie, video games, comic books, book reviews, and more. Now, without further ado, here's Steven and Mike.
I will talk first. Hey, welcome everybody to the Two Geeks and a Microphone podcast. We are so excited and thank you so much. We're excited to have you here and thank you very much for joining us. So today, our big old topic is going to be Jupiter's Legacy. So with that, I want to introduce my co-host in crime is Mr. Michael Shanks. Mike, say hey to everybody, please.
Good morning to all you geeks in geekdom land.
We are pumped to share with you about today's episode. Today, we are talking about Jupiter's Legacy on Netflix. Mike wanted me to watch this where we were talking about, hey, you know, Steven, you should watch this show. And I'm like, I already watched it all. So we're here to talk about it today. Today, we're not going to go through like each and every single episode. We're going to talk about our favorite parts, parts we may not like, parts we're like, okay, what's this about? If you have not seen it, there's going to be spoilers. We're just telling you, spoilers, you know, kind of a thing. So we watched the whole thing. I'm interested in asking Mike some great questions about this because this is, Mike, it is based on a comic book, right?
Yes, I believe it is. I think the comic book came out about 4 years ago, I want to say. I haven't checked it out. I need to go find it.
I just know the name Mark Miller.
Okay. Because what else has Mark Miller done?
Well, I think he's The Walking Dead.
No, that's Rob Kirkman.
Well,
Rob Kirkman's really? The creator of The Walking Dead. You're thinking of another show, which is an animated show. And I believe that's on Amazon. And I can't think of the name of it. And I got a friend who keeps telling me I need to watch it because I'm a fan of Walking Dead also.
He's another one of our fellow guys across the pond.
Oh, okay.
Cool. He's a Scottish comic book writer known for his work on The Authority, The Ultimates, Marvel Knight, Spider-Man, that may be what I'm thinking, Ultimate Fantastic Four, Civil War.
Oh, wow.
Kingsman. I tried to
Kingsman. Search. That's what I, yes. Okay.
That's, I think that's what we're thinking of.
Yeah.
Here is our ever so, you know, you can trust everything that Wikipedia says, but here's the thing.
That's funny.
All right. So he's introduced to comic at age 4, still learning to read. Miller's first comic was the seminal Amazing Spider-Man 121. So in 1973, he's our age, which featured the death of Gwen Stacy.
Oh, wow.
He purchased a Superman comic that day as well. Black and white reprinted comics purchased by his brothers for him would follow, cementing his interest in the medium.
Hey, now, wait a minute. How old was he at this time? Because you said that's 1973.
He was 4. He was born in 1969. December.
Okay, well,
Mark Miller was born December 24th, 1969.
Wow. Wow, that's pretty close to mine. I mean, I'm December 27th, 1970, so.
Right.
Yeah, so we're a couple years apart. Wow. Neat. Yep. Neat. Very neat.
Yep.
Okay, well, let's clarify. He didn't purchase the comics. He was only 4 years old.
Right. He had family. Yes. Yes.
Because you said he purchased the comics. I'm like, well, he's a little bit older than us if he's actually purchasing the comics.
Well, no. He got those. I guess with the parents or whatever, that he got that one and then a Superman comic. And then so he said, all right, so here's what continues. So much that Miller drew. Okay, so that was his medium. He drew a spider web across his face with an indelible marker that his parents weren't able to scrub off on time for his first communion photo a week later.
Oh, my gosh. That's awesome.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
So I'll bet Miller, his parents were ticked.
Right? I bet. Miller was named Alan Moore, has named Alan Moore and Frank Miller as the two biggest influences on his career.
Oh, wow.
Characterizing them as my mom and dad.
Nice.
Other writers he named his influences include Grant Morrison, Pete Milligan, Warren Ellis, and Garth Ennis.
Wow. That's some big names in comic book.
Those are huge, right? More recent writers that have impressed him include Jason Aaron and Scott Snyder.
Okay, cool.
That's so Marvel and DC career. Let's see. So in 2000, Miller replaced Warren Ellis on the authority for DC's Wildstorm imprint. Do I have Wildstorm? Okay. Let's see.
I remember the title, but I don't think I read any of that.
Let's see. In 2001, he launched Ultimate X-Men. In 2006, he joined Steve McNiven and began writing Civil War.
Very cool.
So he was one of the writers for Civil War, Marvel Civil War.
Neat.
That's pretty cool. Let's see. Miller wrote the dystopian Old Man Logan storyline.
Oh, okay.
Which that is not. Now that storyline influenced Logan the movie,
right? Yeah.
But it's not the same, but it influences it, because I have looked at that. Okay. Dude, I am so glad that we've done Marvel and the Marvel Unlimited and Infinite, so we can go back and read these. So here's Miller World.
Wait a minute, his Jupiter's Legacy, is that a Marvel comic then?
No. Okay. Let me read. Here we go. Miller World. In 2004, Miller launched a creator-owned line called Miller World that published independently owned comic books, with ownership split 50-50 between Miller and the collaborating artists. So he owned 50%, and then the other 50, he would get other artists to do their works.
Neat.
The first book under the Miller World brand was Wanted. What?
Wanted.
I love that movie, which subsequently became Hollywood film in 2008, starring Angelina Jolie and Morgan Freeman.
Ah, okay.
So that was the first book. So Wanted is based on Miller. That was his first. That's pretty cool.
I didn't know that.
Because I love the story arc. It was an okay movie, but the concept was incredible. Plus, I love Hitman movies. Okay, spy movies. Hitman. Okay, right. Here we go. Continuing on. So then in 2008, Miller created and wrote Kick-Ass in 2008.
You know, I did hear that.
Adapted into another Hollywood film in 2010. Other books published by Miller World include Chosen, The Unfunnies, and War Heroes, which was distributed by different publishers. In 2010, Miller left his Marvel work made-for-hire contract, committing full time to Miller World. So he's been doing Miller World, I would assume, them for 10 years. He wrote Nemesis in 2010, Superior 2010, Super Crooks, Kingsman Secret Service in 2012, Kick-Ass 2 2012, Hit Girl 2012, Kick-Ass 3 2013, Jupiter's Legacy 2013, Jupiter Circle 2015. We're going to have a discussion later on about sequels. No, because Circle, I think, you know, I'll go later on. I'm sorry. I'm crossing the streams here. Okay. Starlight 2014.
I was going to say Stargirl would be DC.
Yeah,
not so.
Starlight. My bad. MPH in 2012, Huck 2015, Chrononauts 2015, Empress 2016, Reborn 2016. Miller World enjoyed interest from Hollywood, with Miller staying on as executive producer on all adaptations. Nemesis was optioned by 20th Century Fox with Tony Scott attached to direct. Superior was optioned by Fox with Matthew Vaughn on as a producer. Super Crooks and American Jesus were both optioned by Waypoint Entertainment. Kingsman Secret Service released in 2014. Okay, so Lorenzo Di Bonaventura took Jupiter's Legacy and Jupiter Circle under his wing and started development in 2016. Netflix released a television adaptation of Jupiter's Legacy as an 8-episode season. That option May 1st this month.
Right.
Starlight was optioned by 20th Century Fox. Hook was picked up by Jeff Romanoff Studio 8. Chrononauts is in development at Universal. Dude.
Nice.
Dude.
Wow.
He's getting all the stuff made as movies.
Dang.
So
he's done some good work then. Wow.
He has. So that's what they have. That's all our wonderful source. We're citing our sources, Wikipedia. So just to be open, we're just stating that's our source.
Sure.
Hopefully it's all true. But either way, so now we go back to Mark Miller. Now we get into Jupiter's Legacy. That's who Mark Miller was. That was my bad. I'm confused on who was doing Walking Dead. But right. Let me tell you, there are some Walking Dead type elements in Jupiter's Legacy.
Okay.
Yeah. Sort of.
Sort of.
So there are some, just story-wise, there's no zombies yet.
No.
Yet.
I don't think we're going to see any zombies in this. I don't. I mean, I love The Walking Dead, but yeah, I don't think this will be crossing into that realm.
No, but I did cheat and look at what some of the story is of Jupiter's Legacy.
Now, I have to say, this came out of the left field for me. I had no idea this existed. I heard it on Rebel Force Radio. Jimmy and Jason interviewed Matt Lanter, who is he plays
Son, right?
No, he doesn't play the son. He plays. I can't think of the. See, I'm not good with these character names at all. Struggle with the character names. He's the friend of the main character. He's the other rich buddy.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
With all the eggs. He likes the eggs.
Yes, he was the rich friend. Yes, I see the picture now.
I mean, they're all rich. So.
Right, the way they tell the story and stuff. Right, so, right. Let's see. Let me go to the cast.
But anyway, Jimmy and Jason interviewed...
George. He plays George Hutchins or something.
Yeah, I think that's right. Anyway, they were interviewing Matt Lanter, and for those who don't know, Matt Lanter is the voice of Anakin Skywalker from the Clone Wars cartoon series. So
what?
Yeah. You didn't know that?
I did not make that connection.
Oh, my gosh. Hand over your geek card.
I know, right?
Oh, my gosh. I'm a fan of Matt Lanter. I like him a lot. So when Jimmy and Jason promoted him, you know, we're interviewing him and talked about the show, I was like, well, I got to check this show out. This show sounds incredible. In fact, Brenda made me stop the podcast because we got to a certain point where they were kind of giving some spoilers and such. And she's like, no, we need to stop this because I want to see the episode. Right. And we binged it like in one day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's
very watchable.
It is very watchable. I will tell you that. I will say, well, we get into some of my other points about that, but I like any kind of break that I had. So if I was cooking dinner at home, I would have it, you know, my thing up in my headphones. Nice. So I could hear it and that kind of thing. I also late at night or something, if, you know, Kelly was, you know, getting Troy to bed or whatever, I would watch a little bit. And I will say, don't tell anybody, but if I was in the bathroom for a little bit, I watched.
Might be a little too much.
So, but I finished it within a week, all the episodes and all 8 episodes. Now, I will say, by the time, and this is one of the points I want to bring, by the time I hit the 7th episode, I was... probably the 6th and 7th episode, I was kind of fast forwarding a little bit because I was like, okay, let's get to, this is a spoiler discussion, but I was like, come on, let's move it along.
Right.
And that's one issue I think I have with a lot of Netflix adaptations is I'm glad it wasn't 12 episodes. I'm glad it wasn't 10 episodes, 8 episodes. I think it still could have been done in 7 episodes or 6 episodes. They kind of drew it out a little bit, and I was like, oh, man, you know, kind of a thing. But
it was for the story, though.
It was.
I mean, because we met some characters. Okay, we'll have to get to that.
We'll get to that.
We're jumping way ahead there.
Well, I'm just talking about in general at the moment. I would say, in all openness, maybe I just was so excited to see what the end was. Come on, let's just get there. They had me plugged into the story so much that I was like, I wanted to see how they got the powers. I knew the storyline was taking them to there, and I wanted to hurry up and get there because I was so invested in, all right, how did they get them? This is interesting. I'm like, come on, can you hurry up and get me there? You know, kind of a thing.
Well, I don't know. I
that was my problem.
Yeah, it's okay. It's all right. Well, I feel that he kind of took this from DC's Justice Society, which is the precursor to
that.
Justice League of America. I mean, it's kind of funny because the current time of the heroes feels a little more Justice League-like, but we find out that the heroes have actually been around since the 1920s in the Great Depression. Yeah. Which is fantastic story. I loved it. I thought that was awesome.
Mm-hmm. That was good.
So they've been around.
I thought it was a good parallel.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it was.
You know, as they're telling this story, they're telling this story.
Yeah.
You know,
I like that.
Yeah. I loved it. Yeah. Actually, I did like that storytelling. Do you think?
And you know, the characters feel in a way different between the two timelines.
Yes. Yes. You know? Right. I thought their acting chops were great.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Fantastic actors.
Because I felt like the 20s version of themselves, the 20s version seemed more naive.
Yeah.
You can tell by the time we got to 2020 or, you know, present day style, you could tell that there was some, for lack of growth, battle-heartedness. I think that speaks to what we find out at the very end with some of the characters is the aspect that the whole thing about the present day was the issue of this is not the 1920s.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Times have changed.
Right.
And it was all about the code.
The code. Steven.
That was the
same code that Batman uses.
Right. That same code. But I think that was the MacGuffin, was the code. The code kept the story along. Is this the code? Is it not the code? Should we listen to the code? Should we not listen to the code? Should we look at a different code? The code became a central aspect of the tension point of today has changed. It is not the 1920s. And I love that. You're right. How the characters grew from the 1920s was different than the characters of who they were today. And I thought that was well done.
Yeah.
I think it was one of the strong points of the series.
So I felt that the characters of today, quote unquote, represented sort of the Justice League. And I felt the characters of the 1920s sort of felt like the Justice Society. I mean, if you look
into that a little bit more, explain, help me understand that.
Well, Justice Society is kind of the original incarnation of the Justice League. Justice Society was introduced around World War II. They were that timeline. So they fit perfectly with that time. And they had very similar beliefs, the whole code of not killing and so on and so forth. So I felt that team represented the Justice Society. I really think that he pulled a lot of ideas from DC with this storyline. And then the Justice League becomes a lot more complex, especially current day Justice League. They become way more complex. And I felt the current version of, are they, as their team called Jupiter? They never really established a team name,
Union.
Did they? The Union. That's right. The Union. The Union. So the Union of today, I felt they represented more of the Justice League. That's just the way, that's the way it came off to me anyway, as a DC fan. It'd be intriguing to see more of a Marvel fan's take on that and how they would think of
how they would view it.
Yeah.
Well, here is, that's an interesting thought. I'm kind of processing that a little bit because I just saw it as, oh, it's another superhero team. You know what I mean? The Avengers that come together. But, the Avengers are people who are all on their own and then came together for a purpose. The Union seems to be all their own. That's kind of what they are at the beginning. But we don't get that explanation in this season. I don't remember getting anything like that in the season. We see them at the end get their powers and stuff.
But, well, no, they were drawn together, though. They were drawn together.
Right, they were, and I'm just saying the Union, then we know they've been together. So it's not like they were superheroes all on their own that then came together. It was,
oh no, this is like they're pulled together as a team, completely as a team. I mean, that's established in the season. That goes all the way to the end of the season, when we find out how they get their powers and such.
They're connected, they're friends.
Right.
They're,
well, not all of them. Each other. Not all of them.
Some just kind of appear and which is kind of interesting how that occurred. But
but it all came from a vision that the main character is having after his
Sheldon.
Father. Yeah, Sheldon. Sheldon. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How did I forget Sheldon? I mean, I watched every season of The Big Bang Theory. How could I forget that name?
Right.
anyway. So yeah, this whole thing come about because Sheldon keeps getting these visions after his father's death. We find out in 1920s that his father ends up killing himself. He's one of the ones that jumps off the roof after the stock market crash. Fits the timeline perfectly. And they're a rich family. They're about to lose a lot of money. Possibly their corporation. They've got employees who are upset with them. And then, of course, there's a story that breaks that we find out that his father was kind of laundering the money, or he was doing something illegal with the money.
Yeah, he took the pension plans, the money that was supposed to be in escrow for their pension plans, he used that for the business. So it's kind of like a reverse Ponzi scheme. Here, give me money now.
Right.
But yet I'm pretending to put money back in, but he's using it for the business and stuff. And that was another reason we figured out he killed himself.
And then, of course, Sheldon and his brother, Walt. I believe it's Walt, isn't it? Walter?
Walter, yes.
Yes. Sheldon and Walter, they have no idea that that was happening. And then it's broke by a news reporter. And
which
turns out to be Sheldon.
Grace.
Right, Grace. Which Sheldon ends up marrying Grace, which I thought was fantastic. That was great. Good storytelling.
Right. But we didn't see that in this.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we did.
Did we?
Yeah. Yeah, because she breaks the story. He comes to confront her.
Right.
And calls her all kinds of names and everything. And when I saw her, I looked at Brenda. I go, wait a minute. That's his wife. Because,
We
could see in the faces.
Presently, but we didn't see the 1920s or at what point did they?
Well, we didn't see the point that they where they do get married. But
right,
come on, you know it,
right?
Because they're married in the future, so you know they get married,
right?
Do you need to see a wedding to know that happened?
No, okay. I'm just saying, I thought you were referencing we saw them get married. I'm like, we didn't see them get
married. No, I didn't
know
mean
that they're married.
We know that they're married. We know that they end up together.
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
Yes, which is kind of funny. You are correct that we see them when they first meet. It's not stars and in rainbows.
No.
He lets her have it. Who do you think you are? Tell us about this great man. Only to find out that it was true.
Like, right.
Oh, yeah.
But now his brother Walter isn't 100% surprised either. I mean, he's surprised.
He had some inklings because he went through the numbers.
Right. Mm-hmm. And he and his brother have different relationships with their father.
That's correct.
Let's face it. Sheldon's kind of the favored son, you know,
and the more blind, the more naive,
right,
to what's going on. Yeah.
So he's, you know, to him, dad is everything. Dad is the most important figure. Dad mm-hmm. could never do wrong. There is no way that dad would do this. That was the way Sheldon looked at it. And he went in there defending his dad, which is honorable. Mm-hmm. might be naive, but it was honorable, you know, where Walter was kind of stepped back. Well, yeah, dad's honor should be respected, but dad wasn't the perfect man that you think he is.
Right.
And we find out that's true. We find out that's true. So with all that being uncovered, I thought that was fantastic story there. I liked it. I liked it. And it fit really well with the 1920s and the Great Depression. Very good. Mm-hmm. Very good. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we've got the opposite side. We're looking at the 2020s. And at this point, our heroes are questioning their tactics, because we have the attack of he's the bad guy, but he's not really the bad guy, we find out.
Yes, and let's Black Star, right?
Yeah, very interesting.
First, let's talk about that scene, and then let's talk about Black Star.
Okay.
Or that's what I want.
All right, sounds good.
First, let's talk about where he attacks. Holy cow. First episode battle.
Bam. You know,
they've introduced some of the minor, the minor kid superheroes that are coming up, which I thought was good. And then.
Yeah, because we're in the process of them, Sheldon and Grace,
the original
and
union,
Walter, the original union,
pass on.
They're kind of passing on the mantle to the next generation, which are the kids. We find out pretty much are the kids of these heroes. I think most of them are the kids of these heroes.
I'm not for sure, but
because they don't explain where some of them come from.
They don't. We don't have that explanation yet. And I'm wondering if that's season two, realistically.
Right. Well, yeah, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is.
Yeah, but we do know where some are. And what's interesting is here is the son of Jupiter, of the Utopian.
Utopian.
His son.
So Sheldon is Utopian.
Sheldon is Utopian.
Who would be kind of like the Superman of this universe.
Yes, agreed.
Right.
Yes. And his son, he's always like, well, he's not ready yet, or this generation isn't ready yet, you know, kind of thing. And his son's trying to prove himself and be the good son, which I thought was a great dynamic.
Well, and I think that's a bit of Sheldon or Utopian, whichever you want to refer to him as. I think that's a bit of him. I don't want to give up my mantle. He's struggling.
I think it revolves around the aspect of no one can do it as good as I can.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think it's the issue of I don't want to let go. I think he does. But you know how you have those personalities of people who are like, you know, well, they get stressed and like, well, I'll just take it over and take it and be, you know, done with it.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
I know that very well.
We all have those kinds of
I mean, I've been there and I've been under that. So, yes, I get it. Yeah.
I think that's the situation. I think it's that part where of any kind of mentorship thing there or training thing, there's always that point where they have to fly on their own. They have to go on their own. And what I don't want to, I could do it better. I can do. And I think that's what he's struggling with. Utopian's struggling with internally is that, and why he's probably so hard on his son. Because he wants his son to be him, but I think that's part of the thing is his son can't be him.
Well, in most cases, the father usually is extremely hard on the son.
Yes. Harder than anybody else.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed.
Definitely.
Agreed. So that battle was awesome.
Yeah, it was.
That was I was like, what a way to kick off the show. You know,
And we immediately lose a couple heroes too.
Yeah, that you had just met, like, oh man, he's got his buddies,
right?
You know, the son has his buddies that he hangs out with. They have their own team. How cool is that? You know,
right?
And they don't make. Now here's where I thought, okay, here's some of those elements I was telling you earlier about why I think there was a correlation to Walking Dead. It ain't. This is not PG-13, folks. Excuse me. It was quite graphic, rated R.
graphic. Yeah.
Graphic novel. I get it. Graphic. It was very graphic.
Yeah.
I will say. But yeah, he loses two of his friends. And that was a catalyst that there was. I think one of the themes was the bad guys are not playing like they used to.
Yeah, and that's what they're talking about in the throughout the all season one.
That with the code and stuff. Code don't kill.
Right.
But by golly.
Because Sheldon is very adamant on the code of, you know, let's face it, it's the same Batman code. You know, we do not kill no matter what.
Right.
And Sheldon's sticking to it. I mean, you know, there's something to be said about that. It's admirable. It is admirable. Mm-hmm. But I think what we see happen in this first episode with Blackstar already takes out two of the young heroes. I think it's two. Two or three, maybe.
I think it's two of them.
Yeah. Takes out two
for
of
sure.
Them. And then he is almost going to take out Sheldon.
That's right.
And, okay, what is the son's name? I don't remember what the son's name is.
Right? Okay, give me just a second. Okay. Give me just a second. All right. The Paragon. Brandon.
Brandon, thank you.
And he's called the Paragon.
Paragon. Okay. So Brandon's just witnessed two of his buddies being taken out, killed, destroyed. And now he's seeing Blackstar is going to take his father out next.
You're right.
And Brandon's like, no. And he stops it. I mean.
And it is epic.
Yeah.
It is epic.
Literally blast his head apart. It was right. Something just else.
Big old jump and boom.
Head just, like,
yeah. His head caved in.
So, okay. When you say Walking Dead aspect, okay, I guess. Yeah. All right. That's a little Walking Dead there. But.
Right.
I think that's about the only Walking Dead reference we could really connect with this. I
just mean it from a violent standpoint.
Okay. All right. I'll go.
That's
with
what
that.
I mean.
I'll go with that. Sure. Sure. Walking Dead's very violent. But yeah, right. So he just decimates his head. It's
awesome.
Fantastic
it was
scene. Awesome. I loved it.
And then his dad's upset. We don't do that. You broke the code.
It's like, dude, he just saved your life. What the heck is wrong with you?
Well, see, here's where I thought there was some inconsistency, realistically. And I don't know where they're going. Well, I do know where they're going. But the inconsistency is this. You know, we as normal people, if you're in a point where you have to defend yourself, it's self-defense. I would have claimed self-defense. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I agree.
I don't. And so that's where I'm like, well, but I understand they're trying to bring the tension with the code, but I also understand from a larger standpoint, story standpoint, the infighting philosophically, the infighting with the heroes about does the code still apply?
Right.
And I that is good. It is good storytelling. It is a good tension point.
Scene brings that whole discussion out. This very scene of Brandon taking out Blackstar. Well, we find out technically he doesn't take out Blackstar either.
Right, Blackstar's still in jail.
Yeah. I mean, essentially what he took out was a clone.
Right.
Pretty much.
Right, which is really interesting.
I don't think they really called him a clone, but that's what
they
he
did.
Is.
I think they did.
Did they
I
call him
they
a
did.
Clone? Okay.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, that's what
but
it turns
out. Like
out.
Super powerful.
Right.
I mean, kind of a thing. So yeah. Which led to one of the
Cuz Blackstar was actually in prison still.
He was. He was. Then he goes to see him. And he's a hoot.
Yeah, oh, he's great.
He, He is a funny character.
That big he's looking, like, that big huge guy, and he's wearing the glasses and reading. Yeah, and, you know,
he's reading.
And it's like, yeah, what brings you here? Uh-huh.
Right?
That was fantastic. I loved it.
It was really good. Yeah, it was really good. And I like that character. I like the Black Star character itself.
I didn't think. You know, when we first get introduced to him in the battle, I thought, okay, it's pretty much a throwaway character. You know, we're getting him just for this battle to establish what's going on, and then we probably won't hear anything about him anymore. And then, and then he comes up a few times. And he becomes pretty important to the story.
He does.
But he's not the big bad. He's not.
No. You think he is. No. You think somehow he's masterminding something like this with, you know, well, how is there a clone of you? You know, that kind of a thing. And I will say, you know who I thought the other big bad could have been?
Who?
Was the psychologist guy that he kept going to, but he wasn't a psychologist. Remember when Utopian would have those sessions with this guy?
That's funny. My mind didn't even go there. I never even thought anything about the psychologist. That's funny.
Well, I think because the psychologist was like a criminal mastermind.
No,
he was in the jail.
Yeah.
I was like, what? I bet you he's behind it all because Utopian's been kind of having psych sessions, Freudian sessions with him.
Yeah, he sure was. Yeah. No, I didn't even really think about that, but that's interesting.
I did think that was a good twist that I'm like, oh, now I got to go back and watch it again because now I have the context that this psychologist is actually a criminal mastermind bad guy.
Right.
Yet who's in jail.
Right.
He's in the max security prison. And then what in the world is going on?
Right.
You know, kind of a thing.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. I didn't even put that together, but. Okay.
I know.
You're a little more observant than I am, I guess.
well, but I wasn't right. I wasn't right. He was not the big bad guy.
Well, no, he wasn't the big bad guy. No, that's a good twist, though.
Let's go ahead and talk about it because this is our overall. We're not going episode by episode. We're talking overall, and this is our subject. So why don't you share with me about the big
twist? Well, now, wait a minute. Let's go a little bit because... Let's get into a little bit of the traveling to the island, if we go back to the 1920s side, Sheldon is following these visions that he's having because, okay, maybe this is a Walking Dead moment because he keeps seeing his dead father with the messed up face from jumping off the building and all that stuff. So okay, maybe that's slightly. Is that really Walking Dead or is it more Pet Cemetery though?
Maybe
because I kind of got a Pet Cemetery feel out of it, but anyway, regardless. But Sheldon, he keeps following these visions that he's having because he goes insane. You know, we have this moment of him just totally going insane, and all of his friends are trying to figure out what in the world is wrong with him, and he's drawing all these crazy, crazy drawings. And, you know, a lot of lines and just weird things, not to mention drawing his dead father that he keeps talking to.
Right.
Because the whole time he's seeing his father, he's talking to his father, and people are like, who are you talking to? You know?
Right. This guy's lost it.
And then it finally clicks. They're like, wait a minute, you're seeing dad. Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. You know, they finally realize what's going on. And then he's like, look, we have to go find these drawings. We have
and
to go.
It's George who believes him.
Yeah, George does believe him. Who that is.
Once he sees the drawings and stuff, he's like, okay, something's going on.
Right, right. So, and that's Matt Lanter. George is Matt Lanter from Star Wars, The Clone Wars, Anakin Skywalker. Mm-hmm. So he's drawing all these crazy drawings, and then that's when they go on this quest. To find whatever this is, because they don't even know what they're looking for. They have no clue. And in the meantime, they lose their company because Sheldon doesn't show up to the board meeting and they vote them off the board. And Walter is ticked.
Right.
Walter is pissed off. Rightfully so, too.
Yeah.
And Sheldon's just like, look, we got to go on this quest, and this quest is going to be bigger than anything our company is, and so on and so forth. So that's mm-hmm. when we get into the part that you said you felt dragged on.
Right.
Because we did have a couple episodes of they're on the boat because they have to get a charter boat. And no
it's
one...
like a whole episode on the boat.
Yeah. Yeah. But then
get
we get
there already.
But we get established to another member of the team.
True.
Because the captain of the boat, he ends up being on the team.
He does.
Or no, was it the captain? No. It wasn't the captain. It was the guy. Oh, I messed up. Not the captain, but the guy that worked for them. That's right. Mm-hmm. The African-American guy that worked for them because they wanted him to go on the quest with them.
Is that Fitz?
Yeah, I think so.
Fitz Small.
Who in the future is in the wheelchair.
Yes.
And we don't find out
and
why.
We don't know why.
Yeah, we have no idea. Right. I'm intrigued by that. It's like, okay, how did he end up in a wheelchair? In fact, the one bad guy that shows up in the future to help examine Black Star, he even makes a joke. And he goes, don't get up.
You're right.
Right. And you know he wants to punch him.
Right.
Because so does everybody else. Everybody else is like, you know.
It makes you wonder if Black Star put him in the wheelchair.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm curious.
We just don't know.
I have no idea. So that was interesting. But so we get introduced to him, and then that leads on to the boat. And then on the boat, Sheldon kept saying, there's one more. We're missing somebody. And then that's when they pick up somebody out of the ocean.
Right?
I mean, crazy, you know, right?
It is crazy. I'm like, oh, that's the weirdest thing. You
right.
know, it makes you wonder what is going on surrounding this. Because when is there something else at play? And I don't mean destiny or fate.
Well, it does have a big destiny type feel to it. I mean,
it does. And I would have said it was that until we get to the island, until some things happen in the island.
Okay. All right. So let's go down that. So now we get through the drug out part of getting to the island, and now mm-hmm. we're at the island. And so then we go. Now we get kind of a Wizard of Oz feel to it.
Right?
Because you're going through the forest, and you get that whole thing with the trees, because they decide, screw this, I ain't going any further. And they try to turn around, and all of a sudden the trees start shooting up out of the ground, which is kind of cool. Basically, something's telling them, no, you're not allowed to leave. You have to do this. You have no choice. So it's the point in the video game where you can't turn back.
You can't turn back. Dang it. I'm already at that save point where I can't go back.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, that's it. They're at the save point. And you're stuck because you're like, I don't understand how to get through this level.
Right.
So they're right at that point. They're frustrated. They can't get to the next level.
Now what?
Yeah, right. Now what? Exactly.
It's at that point where, remember where they start doing all that infighting?
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're doing all this infighting, and then we see the one, it was Grace, who was like, looks around and sees there have been other people there. And they didn't make it past that point.
See, and that's where I say that this is a destiny thing.
Okay. Sure. Okay. Okay.
Okay. And now we have Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, or not Temple of Doom, Last Crusade, where we get into the room where the Holy Grail is, and we have the one single knight left. And all the skeletons and everything else, and then the one guy chooses the cup, and then what happens to him? He dies.
Right.
And the knight goes, he chose poorly.
Poorly. Right.
I don't know. This just kind of had that feel when they came into that room, and then there's all kinds of skeletons. But the interesting thing was each one of those skeletons were all in a group, and they were in a group of six, which exactly matched them.
Here's where I'm probably splitting hairs here. This is where destiny would make it seem there is a destiny. I will give you that. There is something, you know, but then it's not specific to any individual. There's a group of individuals who make, who don't make it, but finally they're the ones who make it. So,
but that's where I'm like, the others weren't worthy.
They weren't worthy. They weren't.
They chose poorly.
They chose poorly. Now, here's the interesting about it. So what happens next is she gets them to stop, and then they what's next? And then they place their hands on the wall, kind of a thing. And what was interesting, it wasn't just everybody placed their hands and yay. It was, you've got to let something go. There's something harboring within you that you've got to let go of.
Because, we had the first, Sheldon puts his hand up and it works. You know, it lights up.
Lights up.
And it's all
pretty cool.
It's all the same. It matches Sheldon's drawings. What you see on the wall.
I did not catch that.
Yeah.
I did not catch that.
What you seen on the wall matched his drawings, all his crazy drawings that he kept drawing. It all matched that. So he puts his hand up there. It lights. And then I think Grace was the next one. And she puts her hand up there. It lights. And then the guy who ends up in the wheelchair, he does it. It lights.
Fits. His lights up. Yeah.
So his lights up. And then so then we have Walter and George. They're the last ones left. And George puts his up there and it lights. And then Walter puts his hand up there and it doesn't light, and George's goes off. It turns off. And Walter is getting ticked because Walter's going through the jealous moment. Oh yeah, the big brother, the privileged one. He's
right,
you know, and they're all like, "Well, wait a minute, it's not Sheldon," you know. So they're like, "It's the tension between you and George," because he and George don't like each other.
Right,
they don't like each other at all. They've been, you know, they've been picking at each other the entire.
They've been siblings.
Yeah,
they've been sibling rivalry.
But they're not. They're not siblings though. George is just the best friend.
Oh, you're talking about George.
Right, George.
Sorry.
George is just the best friend.
Walter and Sheldon.
But I think you still have this.
George.
In a way, it is a sibling rivalry because George is like Sheldon's best friend.
Yes.
I mean, the way I took it.
And he's Sky Fox.
Right. Yeah. He's Sky Fox.
Do not know what happens later. There's a whole story, evidently, of something how Sky Fox breaks away and becomes their ultimate enemy. But we don't understand. Now, we do understand some of the concepts because he was saying that the code doesn't work anymore. So there's always something about the two of them. That's a good insight on your part. That's really good. Yeah.
Wow. Thanks. So they come to the conclusion like you two have to drop this rivalry between yourselves to get it to work. Mm-hmm. And they both agree to at that point, kind of silently, but they do. So then all of a sudden they light up. But then Sheldon's turns off and Walter's turns off. And they all look at the two of them. Yeah, that wasn't the only tension.
Yeah.
We have this problem between you two.
Yeah.
And that's where the Sybil, that's where the true Sybil,
Civil War.
Well, no.
Sibling rivalry.
Yes. I was having trouble saying sibling. Anyway.
What all you been drinking this morning?
Zevia. It does not have alcohol in it. And I did not put any alcohol in my cappuccino this morning either.
Okay. All right. All right. All right. Sibling rivalry between Walter and Sheldon.
Right. So they finally have to drop that. But, you know, technically, I don't think they ever really do. I mean,
here's the thing. I think it was only for that moment,
right,
to get through. But the world changed and they began to go back,
yes,
to that, those rivalries between them. Yeah, that's why I said I thought that was a good insight on your part, because I really didn't see that until you mentioned it.
Right.
Because it makes sense. It makes sense, especially with a big twist kind of a thing.
Oh, so, yeah. So then, you know, at that point, we're thinking that what is his name?
No. It's Sky Fox.
Sky Fox.
Which kind of reminds me of a Batman character, kind of a thing.
Yeah,
I think.
I'm thinking Nintendo Star Fox.
Oh, Star Fox, right?
Which I used to play that game too. That was a fantastic game.
The 64 version.
Nintendo 64. Love that game. That was a great game.
It was a fun game. It was in 3D, first person view.
Oh yeah. I'm an old school gamer. I like the old stuff. But right. Whoa, squirrel. Sorry.
Right.
We think, because in the future, we find out that he is kind of their nemesis now at that point. And they think that he's behind the cloning of Black Star, too. But.
Right.
But.
When they go into the mind. When they go into the mind, or they're reconstituting the mind of Black Star,
the
clone Black Star, like, oh no, brainwaves in trouble, you know, kind of a thing.
Now, wait a minute, Walter, we need to establish that, because I don't think we've really talked about Walter's superhero side. He's called Brainwave, and he can get into people. He's got a cool power, by the way.
It is cool.
Because, I mean, in that first episode, I loved what he did in the first episode when he
stopped the clone Brainwave.
He basically pulls Brainwave's, I mean, not Brainwave, he pulls Black Star out of the fight. You know, so his mind is completely somewhere else and his body's still in the battle. And like he said, yeah, I decided to pull you away while all my friends kick your ass.
Right.
Which was great.
Right.
And then they're on a beach somewhere. He's pulled him off to a beach somewhere. And like some girl comes walking by and he goes, hey, honey, say hi to Black Star. And she goes, hi, Black Star. And keeps walking.
Right.
I mean, you got to admit, that was freaking hilarious. I loved it. So I like Brainwave's power.
I did.
It's
too.
A neat power.
Kind of
Professor Xavier, but different.
Mm-hmm. And I liked his daughter.
Oh, yeah.
Had this ninja ability kind of thing, but she can, you know, see before people act and all that kind of stuff. So
it also makes you wonder, who's the mother? Does the mother have any kind of power, or, you know, is there anything special about the mom?
You wonder. You're right.
Because
there's so many.
We know nothing about her.
We know nothing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, with that, with the end, so the daughter is helping, trying to hold the mind together while Brainwave is going in to get
the daughter of Brainwave. Yeah. Oh, we didn't even go into Utopian's daughter.
No, we didn't.
And
we're gonna have to do a part two.
Yeah,
episode.
I think so, because she's a huge part of this too.
She is.
She's kind of the black sheep of the family.
She is the black sheep, and I think why the son or her brother is always trying to please dad.
Yeah.
Because there's a black sheep, and she lived her own life kind of a thing.
Yeah, there's kind of a same element between those two as there is between Sheldon and Walter. Because Walter always felt that Sheldon was the favored one. And then with Sheldon's children, it's the same way. The daughter always feels that the son... Brandon and Chloe? I think her name's Chloe.
Yes, it's Chloe.
Yeah.
Yes.
So Chloe always feels that Brandon is the favored of them two. So Chloe, she becomes the black sheep. She's the bad girl. You know, she doesn't want anything to do with the superhero life, except she likes to exploit the superhero life to gain riches, to become popular and become a model, and does all kinds of risque things. Becomes a drug addict. So we kind of forgot about her. I think she's very important to the story because she's a huge part of the future portion of this, and huge tension between her and Dad. And I think Dad's always trying to win her love back over. You know, he's trying. He doesn't do a good job at it.
Right.
He kind of sucks at it. But he tries.
Right.
Give a C for effort, maybe? I don't know.
No, he gets a trophy for effort.
Oh, yeah. No, everybody gets a trophy. Oh, never mind.
Sorry.
We're really diverging here. All right. So let's take it back. So we're back at the end to where we find out Brainwave is in the mind of Black Star.
Yeah. Who else is there though?
So we have Brainwave there. We have Brainwave's daughter. I forget her name.
What was her name? I'll get it here in a second.
Ninja. Because she pretty much is a ninja.
Was it Raikou?
I don't know. Was that it?
Raikou. She was only in the last couple episodes.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, we get to introduce her.
She's too.
Oh, she hates her dad. Big time.
Right.
In fact, she charges him.
Yeah.
She charges him to come help.
And she's like, $1 million a day or something like
that.
Yeah,
something
expenses.
Crazy. Yeah, you can tell they're crazy rich, too. Right. Every last one of them.
Right. Huh? So who else was in there, though? Because they fight Sky Fox.
Yes. Yes.
Because they think, oh, Sky Fox is the guy who's behind it all.
Right, because Sky Fox is in the mind or whatever, because that was in the mind that they're battling.
But who's battling?
It's Sky Fox and Brainwave. They're the two that are battling. Because Brainwave almost loses the battle. And
and who goes in? Who
Grace.
Goes in?
Grace goes in.
Grace goes in.
Grace ends up going in. What did that remind me of? There's another movie that reminds me of. Man, I can't think of it. Oh, well. Anyway. But, yeah, Grace ends up going into
Saw
it.
Gerrera. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry. Oh. That's from a previous podcast, you guys.
Yeah, I gotta explain the penguin
think of
thing
the name
to you.
And then we thought about it right in the middle of something else.
Yeah, I have to explain the penguin thing to you. Anyway. Saw Gerrera. Wow.
Anyway, go ahead. So he's in the mind. So they're in the mind. They're fighting.
Right.
And then Grace goes in.
And actually, Grace almost loses, too. So that just shows you how powerful Sky Fox is. Sky Fox. He's pretty darn powerful.
But is it
neat
Sky
character.
Fox?
Really neat
but was
character.
It Sky Fox?
That was the twist. Because we find out.
Okay.
We find out later, after that battle's over and they both get pulled out of the mind and they're both back into reality again. Mm-hmm. You know, they think they just fought Sky Fox. They think Sky Fox is behind everything. Mm-hmm. He's the big bad guy that they've been looking for, and now they're going to go after Sky Fox. Mm-hmm. And then we find out that it was all created by Brainwave.
Right, but that's the discussion that he was having with his daughter.
Right.
Because while she was in the mind, she realized what was going on.
Yep. Yep.
And she's like, you can buy my silence.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And I'm like, there's that wheeling and dealing again. I love it. It's not just $1 million a day. How much did she say?
I don't know. Something like $10 million or...
It was a crazy amount of money. I was just like, what? Whoa. When you think that they're talking. So here's the other twist on that. you think that they're having discussion. He's got her in a mind palace thing again.
Right.
And then he kills his own daughter.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm thinking, okay, what is driving him? So now we're talking about villain motivation. Here's a superhero who's going into villain. I'm going to do whatever it takes to do an agenda. What is that agenda? And that's where I think we go right back to the code no longer applies.
Yep. Yep.
And he wants to be in control. I think now Walter is like, no, well, you after 100 years of this, no, we have to change. And brother, you ain't getting it done.
Well, you know, the funny thing is when they first get their powers and they unite at the table, you know, it's almost mm-hmm. like the Justice League or the Just Society. Both of them right. have their tables that they all gather around and discuss, you know, their missions and so on and so forth.
Right. I mean,
it looks exactly right. like that. And they're all kind of joking around. And Walter throws out, you know, we could rule the world. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, and they get a little upset about it. And he's like, I'm just joking. So
is he really?
Now, right. Now in 2020, we look at that and go, was he really joking? Mm-hmm. I don't think he was. I think all the way back then, I think it was always there. I think it's always been there.
Mm,
ever yeah. since they got their powers.
He
comes off to me as he was the, I hate to say it, he was the nerdy guy who was picked on, who now wants revenge on everybody.
Right.
And he has
right.
the powers to do it.
Right.
So there you have it.
Yeah. Well,
fantastic twist. Fantastic.
It makes you rethink the whole thing going back from the very beginning with the big fight at the beginning. When he took that Black Star, that was his creation.
Right.
That was his clone.
Right.
That he, you know, stopped. And why did he stop? Because he was he had him stop. Then he said, I can't hold him anymore. And then was that the point that was his first goal? That was his first plan to try to get rid of the Utopian.
Right.
Because the Utopian almost won if it weren't for the sun.
You mean the Utopian almost lost?
The Utopian, yes, the Utopian almost lost. He would have won against the Utopian until the sun stepped in. And I think he realized, oh, how powerful the sun was.
Right.
Or is. Or is about to become. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And I agree with you. Even there, it makes you rethink the whole episode, you know, and then how the actual Black Star escaped and all those kinds of things, how he was behind much of that. So I it was a great twist. Now, I will say, and I'm not going to talk, I'm not going to go into detail, but I will say it caused me to be so intrigued that I wanted to get a story synopsis of the rest of the whole Jupiter's Legacy comics.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so I read them, and I'm not going to say anything because.
Oh, you did read them?
Spoilers. I read the synopsis of them.
Oh, the synopsis. Okay. Happens, okay.
What's coming? And I'm curious what they're going to do and how they're going to, what they're going to change or not change. But I'm just going to say this. And this is no spoilers, but it is great storytelling.
Okay.
It's fantastic cool. storytelling. I think Mark Miller with the other guy who did it, that, it's really interesting. It's really good. It's going to have some incredible twists. We thought that was a twist. There's more coming.
Oh, wow.
But it does, without trying to give away any of that. You are right at this rivalry between them. And now it's all about Brainwave, about Walter becoming, I think he's moving into, this is where I got from the episodes before I looked into, it made me think about, he's trying to now become the new leader because he tried to take out Utopian yeah. before and the brother and the son and his son, the Paragon stepped in. And then now what was stated about, this is why I was trying to remember who was in there. I'm sorry, in Brainwave's when Brainwave was in the mind of Black Star. And he was doing this whole thing, making it seem like it was Sky Fox that was within his mind kind of a thing. I he said something, Walter said something about that it wasn't supposed to be Grace coming in. It wasn't supposed to be Grace.
Oh.
It was supposed to be the Utopian was supposed to come in, and he was going to close his mind inside a Black Star to take him out.
Right.
Do I understand?
I think you're right. I think you're right.
And that was part two. So he's failed strike one, strike two.
Right.
So what else is he going to do? Well, he kills his daughter to keep her silent. And then he's realizing he's got a plan that he wants to take over. And maybe you're right. It is, let's take over the world.
Yeah.
And now, not only did we have Sky Fox, who broke away because of the code. That's how I read that. But now we got another superhero becoming a supervillain, but I think it's for different reasons. And all. I wonder if it's the whole thing about taking over the world.
Right.
He wants to do
well,
that.
And see,
I think Sky Fox broke away because he didn't believe in the code anymore.
Right. That see, after watching the season all the way through, finding out what we find out, I don't think Sky Fox is much of a villain as we thought.
Right.
I think he's more of a villain just because he's separated from the group. But
right.
I think what we're going to find out is Sky Fox really isn't a villain at all. You know, he does things differently. That's the thing.
I think you're right. He looks at things differently. I think he's more suited to become the new leader of this new time.
Okay.
I don't know. I could be wrong.
He's the same age as, you know, because he comes with them. He's part of the original group. So I don't know if he'd be the leader.
Does he keep balance that he has a new code?
Right. True.
You know, in other words, let's say he introduces the code that you only kill in self-defense. Maybe that's what it becomes. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Blackfire makes references to him all the time. Blackstar made several references to Sky Fox. I keep wanting to say Star Fox. He keeps making references to Sky Fox, saying how Sky Fox is more in tune to what's going on than any of you guys. mm-hmm. Which mm-hmm. I mean, that may not be the truth with Brainwave though. But then again, Brainwave has been hiding all of his true intentions for 100 years.
mm-hmm. And it makes you wonder what is he going to do next? What's that next season look like?
Oh yeah. Oh, I can't wait. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think this show, I think it's, since it's been released, I think it has number one ratings in the world right now.
Right. It's on the top 10 for America. I know.
That's
for sure.
That's wow. Wow. I got to say, it was a really, really good show. It's a much different take on superheroes. Mm-hmm. And I like it. I like it. A lot of times
it's family relationships.
Yeah.
It's parental mm-hmm. relationships. It's also group relationships.
Sure.
Yeah.
Heck, we even had family prayer in this. I thought that was amazing.
Right.
That was cool. a Duck Dynasty moment.
Right.
Kind of cool. Kind of cool.
Yeah.
I liked it. I enjoyed that. So I really, really like the show. I think it's going to do good.
It's cool. It's going to be interesting. It is. It's going to be interesting. I think what they're going to do with some of the story elements, some of the stuff that I didn't like, only because I read ahead, some of the stuff I didn't like kind of pans out stuff like, okay, I see what they're doing. I like that. You know, so... There's a bigger story arc at play here, and I like it.
Cool.
So, yeah, I think the story is great. It goes back to what we always say, story rules. It's the story is,
okay,
is
now,
what matters.
I got a question. So you said you read the synopsis of the comic books.
Yes.
Okay.
I did.
And I was thinking about going and finding the comic books.
Uh-huh.
My only question is that going to ruin my expectations of season two if I do that?
Okay, great question. If you do not like spoilers, if you don't want spoilers, then don't read them.
Okay, so what you're saying is maybe read like the first, whatever the first,
To be open, I'm not, I only read about the stories and the storylines and stuff. So I don't know what's in each comic episode, right. Comic book. There's three of them. And I think the Jupiters, the next one, the next comic book series that he did is actually the prequel of what we're actually, I think we're getting both at the same time.
Okay.
I'm not for sure. Cause I only read the synopsis for Legacy. Or went through the story arcs and the full stories for Legacy. So if you don't like spoilers, see, spoilers do not bother me whatsoever. Cause then I like to see how they get played out and that kind of a thing. I'm one of those guys that I would read the end of a book first sometimes.
Yeah. See, you know, I would have been disappointed had I known that twist was going to happen. I would have been.
Then I would say, do not read it. Do not get the comics.
Because I really, really enjoyed having that twist, and it was like, oh wow, what a surprise, you know.
Yeah. So I will tell you this.
I need to wait till it's over before I read.
Wait till it's okay. Over.
All right.
Don't get the comics.
Good suggestion.
Because there are some other twists coming that I was like,
yeah, don't tell me them.
Yeah,
I don't want to.
That's what I'm saying. I was like, what?
Yeah, you and I are different in that aspect. I don't like, I try to avoid spoilers. I mean, I'll watch trailers and stuff. I know there are people I know who actually refuse to even watch trailers because they're concerned about getting spoilers. I'm not quite that bad about it. I will watch it. If it's an official trailer released by, you know, the TV company that's producing it or the movie company that's producing it, to me, it's like, okay, well, this is just a way to promote it and get me interested, so I want to see it, you know. And if they put a spoiler in it, then they shouldn't have done that, you know. That to me, that's the way it should be, you know, should be
right.
But I'm not that bad. But yeah, big story plot elements and twists and stuff. I don't want a spoiler on that. I want to see it. I want to experience it. I want to enjoy it. That's part of my enjoyment of watching it. So,
sure.
So yeah, you're right. So I'll avoid the comics at the time.
Avoid them at all costs.
Okay. All right. Cool.
All right. Okay, everybody. Well, with that, thanks for joining us for our discussion about Jupiter's Legacy. If you have any comments, opinions, please check out our Facebook page, Two Geeks and a Microphone. But also, you can just go to our website, twogeeksmic.com, number 2 GEEKSMIC.com. That's the hub for everything. That'll take you to the Facebook page. It'll take you to our merch page. It'll take you to the Podbean page. It'll take you to our Ko-fi page, which is our support page. Like it's like Patreon kind of thing. So, we went a little bit longer and we could have gone a whole lot more. So if we did not hit anything that you want us to talk about, please feel free to shoot us a note, send us a comment.
Yeah, we'd love that.
And we'll read it on the podcast and we'll talk about it. So so thanks. This was good. This went by quick, to be open with you. I didn't know. I wasn't for sure, but this was a great discussion. I appreciate it, Mike. Thank you.
Cool. I had a great time. This was a lot of fun. All right. So with that said, I think we'll take it on out of here. So over and out, and may the force be with you. Thank you for joining us today on the Two Geeks and a Microphone podcast. Tune in next week when we will have more news and reviews. Until then,
may the force be with you.